It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 292. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, I'm going to talk to Matt Winkleman from Phillies Minor Thoughts and Baseball Prospectus, one of the most dialed-in guys when it comes to Phillies prospects and the Major League Draft there is, and we're going to talk to him about the Phillies Major League Draft selections and the farm system and a little bit about what's going on with the big league team, as there has been a lot of news. What a week we have had here following the Philadelphia Phillies. A lot of bad news, maybe just a little bit of good news. Of course, we'll get into the Phillies series against the San Diego Padres, which finished up on a very positive note, but some devastating injuries, especially one to the Phillies center fielder that we have to talk about. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But again, before we get into the guts of the show, let me just remind you all that if you like bonus content, these podcasts aren't enough for you and you got to have more, become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season by going to patreon.com/hittin'season. We have a video series about baseball cards that I do. Justin Clue and Liz Rocher do some bonus episodes of Continued Success, and Justin and Dr. Trevor Strunk do some bonus Dirty Inning podcasts, and I've got some bonus written material up there as well. I'll have a power rankings for you coming up here in the next couple of days. So lots of extra stuff for our Patreon donors to Hittin' Season. And we really appreciate all you guys who are a part of the Patreon. And again, we're looking for a push, folks. If you haven't given a rating and a review to the Good Fight podcast feed at Apple Podcasts, please go ahead and do that for us if you don't mind. That does help other Phillies fans find the podcast and helps this podcast grow, which is what we're all trying to do, folks. All right, let's get into episode number 292 here. And before we get into the Padres series, there's obviously a lot to talk about, because the week that we have had in Philadelphia, Philliesville, is just one that I haven't seen in a very long time. I can't remember a week where this much stuff has been packed into it. And obviously, the big story is Andrew McCutchen going on the injured list for the remainder of the season due to a torn ACL that he received in the series opener against the San Diego Padres on Monday night. We all know how it happened. Jean Segura doesn't run out of the box on an infield fly. Ian Kinsler wisely lets it drop in front of him. He picks it up with his bare hand, throws Segura out at first base, forcing Andrew McCutchen into a rundown, which ultimately leads him to tearing the ACL in his knee, meaning he will be out for the rest of the season. And this was a cruel blow, as Andrew McCutchen was having a fantastic season at the top of the lineup. We're going to get into McCutchen and what the Phillies might do to replace him coming up in the next few minutes. But also, Odubel Herrera arrested and suspended in the last week. The Phillies had a brutal five-game losing streak, including three straight losses in Los Angeles, which really showed that the Phillies were not ready for prime time. Aaron Nola was blown up a couple of times in this series. Jake Arrieta was blown up in this series. The Phillies traded for Jay Bruce, which we're going to talk about in a little bit more here in just a few minutes. The Phillies promoted Adam Haseley. The offense disappeared for a long while before returning. Adam Morgan was injured. Pat Nashak was injured. Zach Eflin was injured. And then in the series finale here on Wednesday afternoon, Sir Anthony Dominguez leaves the game with an injured elbow. So we're going to start off there with the Sir Anthony Dominguez news, because obviously some kind of voodoo witch has placed a spell on the Phillies bullpen. Either that, or the Phillies pitching coaches and medical staff doesn't know how to handle a bullpen. I don't know what's going on here, but there has been a rash of injuries to this bullpen unlike anything I have ever seen before. It's very reminiscent of what happened to the Eagles in their secondary last football season, where I've never seen this concentration of injuries to one particular position on a baseball team in my life. And it continued on Wednesday afternoon. It looked like the Phillies were going to enjoy a great series win against the Padres coming from behind in the final game. We're going to get to that all in just a minute. But the Sir Anthony Dominguez thing, and Sir Anthony was not having a very good season. Sir Anthony Dominguez was actually having a piss poor season in a lot of respects. Before he got hurt, Dominguez had an ERA of 4.01 and a FIP of 3.96, walking 4.4 batters per nine. He was striking out just over 10.5 batters per nine innings, but obviously Sir Anthony Dominguez was not a guy that you felt terribly comfortable with, but there have been so many other injuries to this bullpen. He was one of the few guys that you had any kind of confidence in, and then for him to leave with an elbow injury is just devastating, even if it's not a long-term injury. And the Phillies say he's showing all the symptoms of an elbow strain, that they don't believe a ligament was torn, but that there will be an MRI in Philadelphia. And obviously, we're all hoping he doesn't need Tommy John surgery, because he does have the ability to shut a lineup down for an inning. I don't like using him for more than one inning, but he also doesn't have great control this year. Maybe some of that today, at least in the game on Wednesday, was due to the fact that his elbow was bothering him. But at the very least, it's likely Sir Anthony Dominguez is going to be out for a little while. And if they put him on the injured list, that would make seven relievers on the injured list. I mean, that's just crazy. Check out this list. I mean, this is just bonkers. Tommy Hunter with a flexor strain. David Robertson with a flexor strain. Eduray Ramos with a shoulder injury. Victor Aranos with elbow surgery. Pat Nashak has a bad elbow. Adam Morgan with a flexor strain. And now Sir Anthony Dominguez with an elbow. I mean, that was supposed to be the bullpen this year. Those were the guys. Those were the guys we were depending on to be the bullpen. And they're all out for varying lengths of time. It does sound like Tommy Hunter is getting closer to coming back. And I've never been a big Tommy Hunter guy. I didn't like him last year at all. I thought he stunk last year for most of the season. But that being said, I am more than happy to welcome Tommy Hunter back. And one of the things that Phillies fans were hoping was that the Phillies would make an aggressive push to go sign free agent Craig Kimbrell and add him to the bullpen, whether it's as a closer or an eighth inning guy or something. But unfortunately, the Chicago Cubs have signed Craig Kimbrell to a free agent contract, a 3-year, $45 million deal that takes him through the 2021 season. So they essentially get 2.5 seasons of Craig Kimbrell. So no, there will be no Craig Kimbrell coming to Philadelphia. The 3-year, $45 million deal, by the way, was exactly the money that I mentioned to the WIP morning show on Wednesday morning when I came on. So, I mean, that just seemed like a sweet spot, and I absolutely think the Phillies should have given him a 3-year, $45 million deal. And Todd Zielecki reported that the Phillies were only willing to offer a 1-year deal for Craig Kimbrell. And really, we're talking about a half-year deal for Craig Kimbrell. They didn't want him beyond this year. And I really don't understand why at this point, because here's the problem. The Phillies obviously need some bullpen help. I don't know when all these guys that are on the disabled list are coming back, and really neither do the Phillies. David Robertson doesn't seem like he's coming back anytime soon. Victor Arano's gone for a long while. I don't know what's going on with Eduray Ramos. Adam Morgan hopefully will be back sooner rather than later, but we don't know. Pat Nashak, we don't know. You don't know how a pitcher's arm and elbow and flexor strain is going to respond. It could be weeks, it could be months. And here was a guy that all you needed to give up in order to get him was money. You don't have to give up any prospects. You don't have to give up any minor leaguers, which the Phillies really don't have a lot of. And the ones that they do have, I would find it very short-sighted if they just gave all these guys away for fixes for 2019. You could have signed Craig Kimbrell through the 2021 season for $45 million, $50 million, something like that, and gotten yourself not a great reliever anymore. He's not the reliever that he used to be. He's not the bullpen savior by any stretch of the imagination, but he is a quality back of the bullpen arm who you could reasonably rest assured can get you three outs in an inning. And so they didn't. They chose to only offer a 1-year deal, and the Cubs snapped him up, and the Cubs desperately needed a closer too. And so now he's going to pitch for Chicago, and the Phillies are left to look around the trade market for a reliever. And there are some options out there. There's Ken Giles. There's Alex Colome. There's Will Smith and Tony Watson. If the Washington Nationals decide that they become sellers, Sean Doolittle, I'm sure, would be of great interest to the Phillies. Now, whether or not there would be a willingness by Washington to go ahead and part with Sean Doolittle and give him to Philadelphia remains to be seen. But what's it going to cost to get those guys? Which of the prospects, the few good prospects that the Phillies have, which of them do you have to give up? And then which of them do you not then have to sign to trade for a starting pitcher? or a center fielder to replace Andrew McCutchen. If Adam Haseley doesn't work out in center field and Scott Kingery doesn't work out in center field, or Jay Bruce in left field doesn't continue to mash the ball, then you got to go out and sign a bat. They probably have to sign a bat anyway. Or trade for a bat. I keep saying sign. They probably have to trade for a bat anyway. You need a bat. You need a starting pitcher. You need at least one reliever, if not two. Signing Craig Kimbrel would have only cost you money. But now they're going to have to find a way to get all of these different things in the trade market. And really, unless you want the Phillies to just empty out the farm system and go all in for 2019, which I don't want them to do. I don't want them to get rid of Alec Bohm. I don't want them to get rid of Spencer Howard, Luis Garcia. Adam Haseley. The Phillies need young players. They need to supplement young guys. Alec Bohm could be your starting third baseman in 2020 the way he's going. So that's the issue the Phillies are running into here. There's a trade market out there, and yeah, I think the Phillies are going to be aggressive and in on it, but no, I don't want them giving away everything in their minor league cupboard. Getting Craig Kimbrel was a way to get a quality relief pitcher without having to do that. But they didn't seem to want to go beyond 1 year. That doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't make sense to me. Unless you feel like you're going to get all of these relief pitchers back, unless you feel great David Robertson is going to come back and soon, and that you're going to get Adam Morgan back soon and Pat Nashak back soon. I don't know, man. I'm still going after Craig Kimbrel. And I'm annoyed that they didn't make a stronger push, that they at least didn't make a 3-year offer, and Craig Kimbrel said, no, I'd rather go play for Chicago. I could understand that if I'm Kimbrel. I think Chicago's probably a little bit better of a situation for him. But Philadelphia is a great situation, and money talks. I'm not understanding. I don't want to be too short-sighted. I don't want to, go all in for 2019 and screw over your ability to put together a good roster for 2020 and 2021. But I think Craig Kimbrel could be a Jonathan Papel-like, has a few Jonathan Papelbon-like years ahead of him. When Jonathan Papelbon came to the Phillies, he was on the downward part of his career, but was still a really effective relief pitcher. I think Craig Kimbrel can be that guy for another 2.5 seasons. So what does the bullpen look like right now? Well, you've got Hector Neris, and then you're praying because you've got Jose Alvarez, who really has pitched a lot better as of late. I'm feeling much better about Jose Alvarez as my left-hander to get out tough lefty hitters. But then you have JD Hammer, who got hammered on Monday against San Diego. Yaxel Rios, who I don't think can pitch at the big league level consistently. Juan Nicasio has experience, but he has been maddeningly inconsistent this year, and I'm not a Nicasio fan. Edgar Garcia has a good slider, but again, he has been inconsistent. Austin Davis is on the big league team right now. He's probably not going anywhere. And there's Vince Velasquez, who has not pitched well out of the bullpen. 5 1/3 innings as a reliever and 8.44 ERA. He's allowed a slash line of .409, .500, .864. Do I have confidence Vince Velasquez is going to get this figured out right away? No, because I don't think he wants to be a reliever. I don't think his heart's into it. I think this is where he should be, and he better wrap his mind around it, or he's going to be gone. But Vince Velasquez has not. I mean, the thought was maybe he can be a back of the bullpen guy, a seventh inning or eighth inning guy. He hasn't shown the ability to be that right now. So the Phillies bullpen is in real, real trouble. It's in real, real trouble. And Gabe Kapler likes to use his bullpen in matchups and all that. He can't do that right now. He's going to have to ask the starters to go longer into games. But he's going to be faced with situations like he had on Sunday against the Dodgers, where he had to pull Nick Pivetta in order for the Phillies to take advantage of a hitting opportunity. A run-scoring opportunity in a game where they'd only amassed 3 hits to that point. I thought when I was watching the game, I was watching the game on my phone. I wasn't able to watch the game on TV, so I was following along on game day. And when Cesar Hernandez got that double and they walked Michael Franco and I knew Pivetta was coming up, I immediately said to myself, damn, they have to pull Pivetta. Because they had to. They had to pull Pivetta there. Even if you're bringing up Phil Gosselin, you had to pull Pivetta there. I know he was shutting down the Dodgers, but they had to try and score. And it was a nothing-nothing game that was probably going to be the only time all game they had an opportunity to score, given how that offense was doing against a good Dodgers bullpen. And it didn't work because Phil Gosselin stinks. And the Phillies need to upgrade their bench. You know, there are going to be issues here with the Phillies upgrading their bench. And we're going to get into some possibilities here in just a second. But the Phillies are going to need Aaron Nola to pitch better. They're going to need Jake Arrieta to pitch better. These two guys have been massively disappointing. All right, so let's get into Andrew McCutchen now being out for the year, which obviously happened on Monday night. A devastating, devastating injury for this baseball team. He had turned out to be a great offseason signing. He was hitting .256, but with a .378 on-base percentage, a fantastic on-base percentage out of the leadoff spot, with a .457 slugging percentage, a weighted runs created plus of .124, had a Fangraphs wins above replacement of 1.7, 10 home runs on the season, 45 runs scored, and he led the National League in walks with 43. He had the 8th highest Fangraphs wins above replacement among outfielders this year in the National League. The 8th highest wins above replacement among National League outfielders. I mean, it's a devastating blow. And we talk about the bullpen having been besieged by injuries. Think about how different the Phillies' outfield looks right now than it did at the end of spring training, when you had 6 outfielders vying for 5 spots. You had Bryce Harper, Odubel Herrera, Andrew McCutchen were your starters, and then you had Aaron Altherr, Nick Williams, and Roman Quinn battling out for 2 bench spots. And right now, of those 6, Harper is the only one left. Out of the 6 outfielders that left spring training with the thought of being able to play, to make the opening day roster, and Roman Quinn would have made the opening day roster had he not been hurt. It ended up being Altherr and Williams. Bryce Harper's the only one of those 6 left standing. And so do the Phillies now have to go out and try and get another outfielder? Adam Jones is with the Diamondbacks. He's having a renaissance season for Arizona. If Arizona decides to sell, he would obviously be a guy I think the Phillies would target. He was the guy the Phillies tried to acquire last year. I think they had a deal in place with Baltimore, and Jones refused to waive his 10-5 rights because he wanted to finish out his career in Baltimore. If the Nationals, again, fall out of contention, Howie Kendrick could be available. Former Philly, Kendrick loved his time in Philadelphia when he was here, and he is having a phenomenal season playing for the Washington Nationals, and Kendrick can play both outfield and infield, making him a very valuable guy. He's been playing third base, second base, and shortstop this year for the Nationals. I'm sorry, third, second, and first, not shortstop. Third, second, and first for the Nationals, but he can also play left field. He would certainly be a guy, and a right-handed guy to match up with Jay Bruce, says that we'd have a lefty and a righty in Bruce and Kendrick. That would be a really good fit. If you're looking for, you know, a true center fielder, you've got guys like Jared Dyson for Arizona. Dyson is having his best offensive season. He's a well-above-average defensive center fielder. If you're also looking just for a pure glove out there, Billy Hamilton can be a good defensive center fielder for you, but he's going to give you nothing with the bat. Hunter Pence is having a great season with the Rangers. You could bring Hunter Pence back. Yasiel Puig is a name you've heard mentioned. I'm not a big Puig guy, not because of his personality or anything. I just don't think he offers that much offensively or defensively. And I think, you know, Derek Dietrich is a name we've talked a lot about, but his cost would be so exorbitantly high. If the Phillies are going to expend some serious trade capital, it's got to be for a starting pitcher. It can't be for a guy like Derek Dietrich, who would obviously help this team, but I don't see that happening. And so how will the Phillies handle his injury? Well, it's going to probably be Cesar Hernandez leading off once again. He'll be at the top of the lineup, I think, most of the time. You could see some Scott Kingery up there. But at first, it'll be Cesar Hernandez in the leadoff spot. You're going to have Adam Haseley playing a lot of center field moving forward. And you're going to see Scott Kingery at third base a lot. You're going to see Jay Bruce in left field a lot. And really, even against left-handers, you know, against whom Bruce struggles, you might see Bruce in left field, Haseley in center field, and Kingery at third base for the foreseeable future. It's been a good lineup the final 2 games in San Diego. All those guys were contributing. I mean, Jay Bruce is going to play every day for the foreseeable future. That has turned into a huge trade for the Phillies. When that first happened, I thought, okay, he's going to be the Nick Williams replacement. He'll place him against right-handers. He'll sit against left-handers. He'll be used as part of a platoon. He's already been worth it. And it's looking to be a very shrewd move by the Phillies, by Matt Klentak. He's already hit 3 home runs as a Philly, 2 in the game on, on the game on Tuesday, including a grand slam. He's got 3 homers, 7 RBIs already for the Phillies since joining the team. And he was a guy that always killed the Phillies as an opponent. Maybe he just needs to see the word Phillies in front of him in order for him to smash the ball, because he's already their most dangerous home run threat. And we're going to get into more of that in just a second. But, I mean, Jay Bruce has been unbelievable since coming to Philadelphia. That's how they're going to have to fill the void left by Andrew McCutchen. You know, I do think the Phillies are going to try and add another outfielder to the mix here because they have to strengthen the bench. Phil Gosselin and Sean Rodriguez are just not getting it done. Just not getting it done. Howie Kendrick's a guy I think would be a great fit, because he can play both infield and outfield. And Adam Jones would probably be right there, my 1A and my 1B, as far as guys I'd like to see the Phillies. And guys I think they could go out and get, who wouldn't cost the type of prospect that I don't want to see the Phillies give up at this point. Up next, we're going to talk about the series against the Padres that just wrapped up. Before we talk to Matt Winkelman, we'll get into the Phillies salvaging their West Coast trip and managing to win a couple of games, especially the finale on Wednesday, which I think was their most important win of this season. I'll tell you why up next, right here on Hit Season. And we're back on Hitting Season. So this series against the Padres, the Phillies just finished up in San Diego, was absolutely huge. After losing the first game, which was their fifth loss in a row, they'd lost the series finale against the Cardinals at home. They'd gotten swept in three straight by the Dodgers and looked outclassed doing it. And then they just suffered the most demoralizing defeat of the season in San Diego, where they were blown out in an Aaron Nola start, and a start where in a game where Andrew McCutchen has his knee ripped up and he's out for the season. The fifth loss, their season high fifth loss in a row on the West Coast, it just looked like the season might start to unravel right then and there. And then they come out and win the final two games of the series, thanks to the newly acquired Jay Bruce and an offense that finally got it going. So, as the Phillies enter a three-game series at home against the Cincinnati Reds, they are 35-27 on the season. The Braves were playing Pittsburgh as I record. This is still early in the game, so they were one game up on Atlanta as they played Pittsburgh. So if Pittsburgh wins, the Phillies would be 1.5 up on Atlanta, half a game up if the Braves win that ball game, 5.5 up on the Mets, and all of a sudden the Nationals just 6.5 games back. The Nationals and Marlins actually have been playing well over the last couple of weeks. Nationals getting their legs under them just a little bit, but still 6.5 games behind the Phillies in the National League East. But the Phillies' five-game losing streak tightened things up a little bit here in the NL East, and that's definitely unfortunate. But the finale was their most important win of the season. And in response, I feel this was directly in response to a tweet of mine when they went down 4-1 and then went down 5-2, and it looked like they were just gonna try and make their flight home back to the East Coast, wrap up a dismal West Coast trip at 1-4, that they were just gonna pack it in. And I really just wondered out loud, is it too much to ask this vaunted offense with all of these star players, granted without Andrew McCutchen, but still a lineup loaded with good offensive players, is it too much to ask for you to overcome a three-run deficit once? Would that really be too much to ask? And they obviously read the tweets. Somebody in the clubhouse saw my tweet, and it got the club fired up. And you guys don't have to send me any cards or letters of thanks, you know. Just knowing that I helped the team win is really thanks enough. That they came back from three runs down in the series finale to pull out the 7-5 win in dramatic fashion, too, by the way. How that game ended was amazing. First, Adam Haseley gets the go-ahead RBI double for his first big league hit, breaking the 5-5 tie. But you had big hits from Bryce Harper in the inning before when they were down 5-2, making it 5-4. And then Gene Segura in his redemption game, hitting a game-tying single up the middle to make it 5-5. And then Adam Haseley comes up in the eighth inning and puts the Phillies up 6-5 with a big double down the left field line. Scott Kingery running from first on the pitch, and Kingery's athleticism and his hitting, we're going to talk about Scott Kingery here in just a second, has been enormously helpful to this team over the last few days. And then you had Andrew Knapp with a nice insurance run, knocking in an RBI single, knocking Haseley in to give the Phillies a two-run lead, which seemed really important because after Sir Anthony got hurt in the bottom of the eighth inning, two guys were on base with one out. Sir Anthony had allowed two runners on with one out. Neris then walked a guy to load the bases with one out, but he got Ian Kinsler on a strikeout, and then in an unbelievably exciting tense battle with Manny Machado, who did a grand slam in the game on Monday to add insult to injury to give them their 8-1 lead, or 8-1 or 8-2 at that. It was 8-1. He got Machado to pop out on a brilliant catch by Gene Segura in shallow left field to get out of the jam, and then Hector Neris shut the door 1-2-3 in the ninth. For me, that was Hector Neris' most impressive save of his career. I just can't say enough good things about the five-out save that Hector Neris was able to lock down. And Hector Neris still makes me nervous. I don't know that I'm ever not going to be nervous when Hector Neris comes in for a save, but he has been money. Aside from the home run that he gave up in Los Angeles in the second game of that series after the Phillies had tied it at 3, Neris has been awesome. And every relief pitcher gives up a walk-off dinger at some point during a season, just about. It's very rare that you get a Brad Lidge 2008 season where a relief pitcher doesn't get touched for something like that. So Hector Neris's performance, and really, they're going to be relying on him a lot here with this bullpen in the shape that it's in. And please, Hector Neris, whatever is going on, whatever disease or whatever exercises your bullpen mates have been doing this year, don't do it. Do the exact opposite of whatever it is anybody else in the bullpen has been doing. Please stay healthy. Please stay healthy. But Hector Neris has been absolutely fantastic in the closer's role for the Phillies, and they're going to need him to be moving forward. I mentioned a minute ago, Jay Bruce had a monster first two games for the Phillies. The team, I mean, they think about how desperately they need his power. His 17 home runs lead the team. He's clearly their most dangerous power threat in the lineup right now. They would not have won these two games without him. I know you don't calculate wins above replacement by, you know, Jay Bruce having two great games and the Phillies winning those two games largely because of him, but they would not have won these two games without Jay Bruce in the lineup. The trade's already been worth it. And the team needs his power in there. The Phillies rank 22nd in home runs in baseball this year, 73, and they've given up more home runs than any other team in the National League. They've given up 94 homers this year, fourth most in baseball. They've been out-homered 94-73, and that's on the arms for giving up that many home runs, especially guys like Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta, and the bats for failing to lift the ball enough and get the ball out of the damn yard. Phillies have to do better in the homer department, and hopefully Jay Bruce will continue to help them do that. Scott Kingery has started his third straight game at third base this weekend. It appears he really has taken the job from Michael Franco. And he had another really good game on Wednesday. He's just adding so much with his bat. His walk-to-strikeout ratio is still way off, striking out and barely ever walking. But you know what? He's not thinking at the plate right now. Last year, I think his problem was he was worried about not walking enough and getting himself into disadvantageous counts. Now he's just being aggressive. He's playing his game. He's showing significant pop. He had a big home run in the series in the game on Tuesday night. And he's been extremely productive so far, batting .333, .375, with a .578 slugging percentage, 4 home runs and 10 doubles for Scott Kingery already this year. And his athleticism, running the bases, this is the Scott Kingery that we were hoping to see when he signed his major league deal out of spring training at the beginning of the 2018 season. Now let's talk about the starting rotation a little bit in this series. Jared Eichhoff, we'll start off with the good. A really good bounce-back game from him against San Diego. It felt like his time in the rotation might be numbered, but he was more aggressive in the game on Tuesday, and he put up 6 innings of 3-run ball. That's a very Eichhoffian performance. That's very human metronomish of him. 6 innings, 3 runs. That's what Jared Eichhoff does, and it was exactly what the Phillies needed in the game on Tuesday, because the two quote-unquote best pitchers on the team, Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta, wet the bed in this series, as they have been doing on a regular basis this year. Consistency just does not exist for these two guys. Nola and Arrieta combined to make 3 starts on the road trip, and none of them were good. If this team is going to be a playoff team this year, they need more out of Nola and Arrieta. Let's start with Arrieta. And maybe Arrieta just is what he is right now. He's a number 5 starter. He's just not very good anymore. And for a guy who talks a lot and is willing to talk about some of the things his teammates need to do better in order to help the team win, Jake Arrieta's got to stop allowing hitters to tattoo so many balls off of him. Seems like he gives up 6 or 7 loud hits a game, and usually a couple of them are homers. I mean, nobody was expecting Arrieta to be a rotation ace when he was signed for $25 million a year, but you had to expect more than what he's been giving you. I mean, a ground ball pitcher who's given up 14 home runs this year, who couldn't get out of the 5th inning today, giving up 5 runs on 7 hits, 2 home runs, now has a 4.29 ERA and a 5.12 FIP on the season. That's not good enough. That's not good enough from Jake Arrieta. Not if this team wants to be good. Thank goodness Zach Eflin has been the number two starter this year. Zach Eflin's been the two, and Arrieta has been the four or the five this year. Not good enough from Jake Arrieta. It's just not good enough. Jake Arrieta is more than happy to call out teammates when they're not doing the right thing, when they're not executing and playing well, and he is absolutely within his right to do that. It's absolutely within his right to hold some players accountable, because Gabe Kapler doesn't hold players accountable publicly enough. It was what my only complaint about the way he handled the Jean Segura situation this week is how he praised Segura after the base running, after the lack of hustle coming out of the box. I agree, don't suspend Jean Segura. You can't suspend Segura for stuff that happened with a different team, and this was a first offense with the Phillies, and Segura, I'm sure, isn't going to let that happen again, so suspending him only hurts yourself at that point. But I also don't agree with throwing bouquets of roses at Jean Segura after the incident. He's a player's manager, that's fine, and that's just what he's going to do. I don't mind veteran players coming out and having a little bit of a harsher tone with other players. That's fine with me. But you got to hold up your end, man. It's not that Jake Arrieta, you know, can't have the good game. We've seen him have a couple of good games here or there. He can't string them together. He can't string together more than two good starts in a row. It was a ridiculous performance on Wednesday. Just a terrible performance in a game you had to have. And luckily, the offense bailed him out, and the bullpen bailed him out. And Aaron Nola's 2019 season, he was on a good run in May. He had a very good May, Aaron Nola did. And it looked like he was going to turn the corner. And then in San Diego on Monday night, he got lit up. And there's no way to sugarcoat it. Aaron Nola got lit up on Monday night. I thought that was behind him. I didn't think we were going to see that again. This is really mirroring Cole Hamels' 2009 season. Two pitchers who had big seasons the year before, but also pitched a lot more innings-wise and pitches-wise than they ever had in their careers, and then they struggle the following year. I don't think every pitcher who has a big jump in innings necessarily comes back the next year and struggles, but it happens. It does happen sometimes. And I don't know if that's directly related to what's going on with Aaron Nola. I don't know if the fact that the ball is probably different this year. I mean, the balls are juiced this year. Home run rate is way up. Major League Baseball is on pace to shatter the record for most home runs in a season. 70-some-odd players are on pace to hit more than 20 home runs this year. That would be by far more than any other season. So maybe the ball is different. Maybe the seams are lower. Maybe it's just carrying better, which is why Aaron Nola is giving up so many home runs and why Arrieta is giving up a lot of home runs. Whatever it is, though, they got to stop it. And Aaron Nola's season this year just reminds me so much of Cole Hamels' 2009, when they just neither pitcher has been able to get it together and sustain success like they did the previous year. And it's hard to see how the Phillies stay in first place if Nola is going to have an ERA of 4.69 and a FIP of 4.39. If he's going to walk four batters per nine innings and give up 1.4 home runs per nine. Those are insane numbers for Aaron Nola. If this team's going to be good, those numbers can't be where they are. Because, I mean, listen, we hope Zach Eflin is able to make his next start. It looks like he will be, and he's able to keep this up. You hope Jared Eichhoff is able to continue to do what he's been doing. But Nick Pivetta, you know, you'd love to see him follow up that Los Angeles game with a game just like that against the Reds this week. Maybe that was the first game of breakout Nick Pivetta. You hope so. Fingers are crossed. But the Phillies are absolutely in the market for a starting pitcher. Madison Bumgarner, Mike Minor. I mean, geez, those would be great additions. I don't know that the Phillies have the prospects to do it. I don't know that they should give up the prospects necessary to do it. If those guys require you to give up Alec Bohm, I'm not doing it. If they require you to give up Adam Haseley, I'm not doing it. And so you need to ride with the five guys you have and hope they stay healthy. Or you get a less accomplished starting pitcher. In which case, are you really helping yourself? Probably not. So, listen, this was a great series by the Phillies against the Padres. To come back in that game, especially the finale on Wednesday, I don't want to be overly negative. I don't want to focus too much on the negative. It's been a very, very negative week if you're a Phillies fan. Not much has gone right. The one thing that really went right, one of the few things that really went right here is that the Phillies ended up surprising us all and winning the series against the Padres and finishing a six-game West Coast trip at 2-4. That's, you know what? I'll take it. Because now you get three against the Reds and three against the Diamondbacks. It's a chance for the team to breathe a little bit, to maybe, I don't want them to relax. You can't relax, obviously. And maybe my mindset is one of the mindsets that gets teams in trouble, because they can't relax against the Reds, who have a better run differential than the Phillies, by the way. You can't relax against the Reds or against the Diamondbacks, because both those teams could come into Philadelphia and surprise the Phillies. So they need to maintain that intensity. But it was obviously a much better plane ride back to Philadelphia from San Diego, having won the final two games of that series. After that game on Monday night, it felt like things were slipping. I didn't think they were going to win those next two games, especially when they went down 5-2 in the middle innings against the San Diego Padres here on Wednesday afternoon. Great job. Great job by the offense to dig themselves back into the game, score five runs unanswered in the game against the Padres. Great job by Hector Neris. Great job by Gene Segura, Jay Bruce, Scott Kingery, Adam Haseley to get the Phillies a series win heading back to Philadelphia. Up next, I'm going to talk to Matt Winkelman from Phillies Minor Thoughts and from Baseball Prospectus about the Phillies series against the Padres, the trade market, the farm system, and the MLB draft. That's all up next, right here on Hittin' Season. Well, with the week that we have had, we forget about the Major League Baseball draft, which the Phillies conducted along with the other 29 teams in baseball this week. And we're going to get into who the Phillies selected with the 14th overall pick and talk about what their overall strategy was for the draft this year. We'll get into some minor league stuff as well with Matt Winkelman from Phillies Minor Thoughts and Baseball Prospectus. If you don't follow Matt on Twitter, I can't imagine why you don't. If you listen to this podcast, you probably already do. But if you don't, make sure you give Matt a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Winkelman, and we're going to get into some Philly stuff as well. Matt, welcome back to Hittin' Season. How are you, pal?
I'm good. A bit tired. The draft is definitely utter chaos for 2.5 days.
Yeah, it's a whirlwind for you, I know. I mean, because you were doing write-ups for basically every player, and if you go to philliesminorthoughts.com, you can read Matt's opinions and write-ups and thoughts on a lot of the different draft picks the Phillies made here over the last few days. And, you know, unlike the NFL draft, you know, where we see a lot of these guys in college football, we don't get to see really any of the high school guys and a lot of the college guys, only if they really make the College World Series, unless you are really scouting amateur players in baseball. So we'll get to the draft here in just a second, but obviously, you know, let's talk about the big league club first here a little bit, Matt. And as you know, we found out when Sir Anthony Dominguez left the game on Wednesday afternoon that it looks like at the very least he's going to hit the injured list for a little bit with a balky elbow, and that makes seven injured relief pitchers right now. No major league team is set up to handle this kind of a blow to one specific area of their team. So I guess since you're a guy who follows AAA really closely and AA really closely, we know a lot of the guys have already been called up to the big league team. Yaxel Rios is already here. J.D. Hammer's already made the leap. A couple other guys, Edgar Garcia, is already here. But obviously, they're going to still probably need another relief pitcher or two here over the next few days at least. What do they have in AAA and AA that could provide some relief at this point, or is the cupboard bare?
Cupboard's pretty bare. I would have said coming into the year, your call-up guys would have been Edgar Garcia, given how he was throwing early, maybe J.D. Hammer, Tyler Gilbert, who's kind of a generic lefty, but he's on the injured list in AAA because everyone is hurt.
Yeah, why not?
So the only 40-man relievers or 40-man pitchers in AAA left are the four starters in Eniel De Los Santos, Drew Anderson, Ranger Suarez, and Cole Irvin. Unfortunately, at least some of them have to be backup starters just in case Zach Eflin gets hurt again or something like that happens. The best I can say is someone like Drew Anderson or Eniel De Los Santos, they just decide you're in the bullpen now, kind of like what they did with Vince Velasquez, and we're just going to make it work because we need people to throw arms. Or not throw arms, throw balls. Hopefully they don't throw arms off.
Yeah, well, at this point, who knows, Matt? I mean, that could be the next thing. they're throwing plenty of arms out here at this point.
Yeah. The one guy I will mention, because we briefly talked about it off air, is Kyle Doughy, who was on the fast track from AA to AAA and has suddenly lost all semblances of his already poor control in AAA. But I guess he's a guy, if in the next month he starts throwing strikes again, is an actual legitimate bullpen arm they could bring up just to have another lefty out of the bullpen.
Well, it seems like they're going to have to make do with the guys that they have at the moment. Obviously, they're going to be active, I would imagine, on the trade market. Craig Kimbrell off the market. He's signed with the Chicago Cubs for 3 years, $45 million. Matt, what do you make of the Kimbrell signing?
The Cubs might have been the only team as desperate as the Phillies for somebody who could pitch late innings. And I think Todd Zielecki said the Phillies were interested, but only on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
And I mean, we can argue about whether it's prudent because it's not my money, it's somebody else's money. But they have a lot of contracts on the books, and they're probably going to want to go sign one of the big free agents next year, and they're going to have to pay some of their other guys. So whether they wanted, I think it's another $232 after this year on the Kimbrell deal. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be something that's going to be hotly debated.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I from a long term roster perspective, but you know, obviously, this team really could have used Craig Kimbrell, who was not the Craig Kimbrell of old. I mean, I think a lot of people in Philadelphia were assuming that you get Craig Kimbrell, you're getting Atlanta Braves Craig Kimbrell, and that's just not who he is anymore. But I still think he could give you the kind of production that Jonathan Papelbon did when he came to Philadelphia. And people think like, well, Jonathan Papelbon was terrible. No, he wasn't. Jonathan Papelbon was a pretty good relief pitcher, pretty good closer while he was here. And obviously, Craig Kimbrell doesn't make up for the fact that you lost seven guys on the disabled list. And, you know, some of these guys are coming back. It sounds like Tommy Hunter is getting relatively close to coming back. And, you know, we can kind of scoff at whether or not Tommy Hunter is useful given the season he had last year. But, man, when the alternatives are Yaxel Rios and a Vince Velasquez, who is still getting acclimated to the bullpen, a lot of other guys, Austin Davis out there, who you just don't trust. I mean, Tommy Hunter all of a sudden seems like a world beater. So, I mean, but I do get it. I get why the Phillies didn't want to go more than 1 year, but now they have to go out and try and get a relief pitcher on the trade market and maybe get two relief pitchers on the trade market, which I kind of wanted to ask you, you know, given all the needs this team has to fill, maybe go out and get somebody to replace Andrew McCutchen's production or get somebody to play center field so you have a true defensive center fielder out there, or to, you know, get a starter for the rotation given how Jake Arrieta has pitched or how up and down Jared Eichhoff has been, whether or not Zach Eflin's going to have recurring injury issues, and now the bullpen. You know, these are all different areas the Phillies need to address, and they don't have a farm system that is super deep anymore with top-level prospects, and frankly, you know, we saw the Phillies empty out the farm system during the Ruben Amaro run. I don't know that I want them getting rid of everybody that they have that's useful just to kind of stockpile and fill in the gaps here in 2019. So I guess my question to you is, as someone who follows this farm system closely, are there a couple of guys that you would hold on to for unless, you know, you were given the world?
Yeah, I think it's really hard right now to move. Well, I'll call them the top four prospects in the system, I think. We'll get to Bryson Stott, their number one, their first round pick this year, who I would slot in there, but is obviously not tradable. I mean, Spencer Howard is currently hurt, but the rumors out of Florida is that he's been pitching more on the extended side and they're being more careful with him, but I don't think his value is that high right now, and you'd be really selling low. Same thing with Luis Garcia, who's 18 and struggling in probably the worst place to be hitting right now, which is full season ball in a park that is pitcher friendly and coming off of 2 weeks of or 2 months of New Jersey spring mud season.
Yeah.
And then you got beautiful Adam Haseley, who is functionally your Andrew McCutchen replacement right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, what about Alec Bohm? Is Alec Bohm someone you would think about moving in a deal if you wanted to go? Let's say Mike Minor is on the market.
Oh, and no, frankly, absolutely. I mean, I had my preliminary list pulled up, and Bohm's number one. His stock's up right now. I mean, if you're moving Bohm, you're going for, I don't know what player is available in that stratosphere, but, I mean, you're looking for something that's long-term and impactful.
Yeah.
Because
like
right
a Whit Merrifield type player, right?
Oh, I'd be that would be tough there too. Like you'd be looking for, I don't know what the if there's even a starting pitcher, like, is Robbie Ray having a good year? That kind of like young pitcher under control for a few years. But with Franco kind of having a bad year, suddenly Alec Bohm, who's on fire in high A and will probably be in double A by the end of the year. You have to double take as to whether he's actually a future player for this team as soon as next year.
Right. Right. That was going to be one of my questions. I mean, given how well he's hitting and given that it looks like he's going to be in Reading before too long, we saw how quickly Adam Haseley made the jump from double A to the majors, spending just a couple days in Lehigh Valley. I could easily see the same thing happening with Alec Bohm next year. So, I mean, I agree with you. I wouldn't move Bohm for anything. I wouldn't move Haseley really for anything right now. But that certainly limits what you can get on the trade market, both in quantity and quality, does it not?
It does, unless someone is in love with Adonis Medina. I think that takes you out of, it probably takes you out of the Mike Minor deals. If for some reason the Nationals dangle Anthony Rendon, that's a different conversation because he's very, very good. But it probably takes you out of the Madison Bumgarner sweepstakes. And the thing we haven't really talked about as a deadline strategy is August trades are out. So the Phillies were just taking salary dumps for just capable major leaguers. That's out.
Yeah, and this is why I thought getting Craig Kimbrell with his warts fully known, it only cost you money, and he's only going to be signed through the 2021 season because you're not getting signed into a 3-year deal. It's basically this the remaining second half of this season, and then next season and the season after. So it's not like you're signing him to a 5-year deal like you did with Jonathan Papelbon. So this was a guy you could have gotten, and you could have basically punted trying to find a top flight reliever on the trade market, and you could then use what trade chips you want to use for a starting pitcher or maybe some kind of outfielder to supplement the loss of Andrew McCutchen. Although I got to say the early returns on Jay Bruce are pretty good so far, Matt. He's really hit pretty well. And granted, just 2 games that he's been in the Phillies starting lineup, but so far so good.
Yeah, that's definitely a trade that's I've worked out just in winning the 2 games in San Diego over the last 2 nights. I mean, I haven't posted it online, but like, I'm pretty sure Jay Bruce in the last 2 days has put up more major league value than Jake Schiner will do in his entire major league career. And I don't think that's an insult.
No, absolutely not. And for $3.5 million over the next couple of years, that's an absolute steal. So maybe the Phillies don't need to get as aggressive in finding a McCutchen replacement if Adam Haseley can hold down center field and Scott Kingery can hold down third base and Jay Bruce doesn't go into a tailspin at some point here this season. But that's a lot of ifs, and obviously the Phillies are going to be trying to upgrade on the trade market here over the next few weeks or so. So let's talk about the draft a little bit here, Matt, and the Phillies with the 14th pick in the draft. You mentioned his name just a second ago, picked UNLV shortstop Bryson Stott. Tell us a little bit about Bryson, because again, this is not a guy that I know a whole lot about, but I know UNLV, he's got a little bit of a Bryce Harper connection, does he not?
He does. It seems like all the Vegas people know each other, because I mean, Harper's close with Bryant, close with Gallo. I know there's more involved in all of that, but there's also a personal family connection. A little bit of, I want to say there's somebody's mother is somebody's sister's cheerleading coach or something like that.
Wow.
Who knew that Vegas was such a small world? But Stott is a guy who I think everyone has raved about the Phillies just getting him at 14 because he fell there. I don't think they expected him to be there. I didn't expect him to be there. He has absolutely mashed at UNLV the last 2 years, but it's also not the biggest conference, and Vegas is definitely a hitter's environment. But most people think he can stay at shortstop. If not, he's going to move over to third base. He doesn't do everything the most conventional looking, especially his throwing motion. There's some worries about his swing, but solid power, has shown good contact ability, good approach, plus speed. Nothing really jumps out off the table, but he's a college performer who's going to stick on the infield and do a lot of everything.
So is this a guy that you think is automatically, you mentioned that he was in your top four. Where does he slot in among the Phillies' top prospects at the moment? Behind Bohm, I would imagine?
I think for now I'd slot him behind Spencer Howard and Luis Garcia as well. And then you just, I mean, him versus Adam Haseley, you're really comparing apples to oranges, even though they're only two drafts apart. Just because Haseley's now we're seeing in a major league context versus a guy who hasn't even signed a contract yet. But yeah, he's definitely a top five prospect. And I think if he shows up and starts hitting in the wherever they send him, whether that's Williamsport or aggressively up to Lakewood, he'll probably rise. He should be a quick mover. Definitely, I don't really get a lot of high upside. And I think this draft in general, once you got past the first couple picks, really was kind of ugly. But this is a guy who's, I mean, move quickly, maybe solid regular, maybe make an all-star game here or there.
All right, I take that. And, you know, as the Phillies didn't have a second-round pick because they gave that up when they signed Bryce Harper to his free agent contract. But on the second day, Phillies made a number of selections beginning in round number three. And, you know, just kind of looking, I know a lot of the strategy that goes into the Major League Draft is sometimes you take a guy maybe earlier than he ordinarily would have gone, so you spend a little bit less, and then you can spread that money out on some high school players later in the draft. What did the Phillies' second day pick kind of look like? Did they have an overall philosophy that they were using?
I don't know if there was an overall philosophy. They took a high school shortstop, super high risk in the third round, but while he was ranked lower than where he was taken, there was a lot of division on it, and he was rising quickly at the time of the draft. I think they generally took people around when their slots were for round, I would say 3 to 7 and maybe 8, going under slot in 9th and 10th on college seniors. So I don't think they actually have that much money to play with on day three. Generally, the theme of the draft all the way through the end of today seemed to be guys that throw hard or have plus stuff, but have a little bit problem knowing where to locate it. Like fourth round pick Eric Miller has one of the best left-handed arms in the draft among college starters, up to 97, 3 pitches. He's 6'5". But sometimes stuff will be down, sometimes stuff will be up, sometimes control will be there, sometimes it won't. Their sixth round pick is a pure reliever who can hit 101 and probably walks about a batter an inning right now.
Well, if you throw 101 and you get the case, I'll take a walk an inning. But as long as you're not, you know, piling up 3 walks an inning, that's where you run into a little bit of an issue. But obviously, baseball doesn't really work that way. And it sounds like, you know, there are so many guys that throw hard, and you know, when you're taking these guys later in the rounds, I mean, you're basically just looking at tools, are you not? I mean, there's how much, if you're taking college players, how much are you looking at their college statistics and kind of what they did while they were playing in college, and how much do you just kind of look at the raw tools that they have?
I think you're doing both. So the Phillies obviously have gone fairly into analytics, and so they're running all sorts of numbers projections on the back end. And I, at least in talk, they're trying to marry that with what the scouts are seeing. So if a guy's putting up massive numbers and your spreadsheet says he's going to be good, probably want to talk to the scouts that have seen him. Is he just mashing inferior competition? Was like the whole conference down? Or is he the real deal and you're finding something?
Yeah.
But I think you're scouting tools, something that's become a bit more, I think in the last few years, it feels like it's really become something noticeable, is drafting for what you do well. And I brought up the name Kyle Doughy earlier, and Doughy, when they took him in, I had it up earlier, the 16th round of the 2017 draft, he was just an arm strength guy who couldn't find the strike zone. Now, he's still somewhat of that, but he's also throwing 4 miles per hour harder with a breaking ball that's a grade better. So you're also looking for guys that you can put in your system and get that kind of jump.
You mentioned Doey as a 16th round pick a couple of years ago, and one of the criticisms I've seen from people on Twitter, I would imagine you've probably seen it too, is of the Phillies' performance in these past few drafts. And I think obviously people tend to gravitate towards the Mickey Moniak draft and, you know, focus on, you know, how he hasn't, it certainly doesn't look like he's going to be what a number one overall pick in the draft should be. But I think we kind of knew that at the time, that he, you know, was kind of a weak draft and Moniak wasn't going to be that superstar. But, you know, I think we look at, you know, some of the draft picks and some of the issues that the Phillies have had with the offense. And a lot of the criticism that I've seen is that the Phillies haven't been producing enough good players from the draft at the and getting them promoted to the major league level where they're productive players. Is that a fair criticism of the last few drafts over the years? Because I look at Rhys Hoskins and Scott Kingery, and, you know, Adam Haseley's up. I mean, I see some guys that they've drafted, Aaron Nola for another one, that are on the big league team and performing well. Is the Phillies' track record in the draft any better or worse than other big league franchises?
Well, I would say it's in looking back, it's worse. Mm-hmm. So I'm just looking at past drafts right now. So in 2014, they took Aaron Nola in the first, Rhys Hoskins in the fifth, and Austin Davis, who's technically on the major league team, was their 12th round pick that year. But they only have six players from that draft still around the organization. And if you look before that, the only guys that you'd say are like major league contributors right now are Andrew Knapp and Adam Morgan, with Roman Quinn and Yaxel Rios and Drew Anderson and stuff hanging around.
Right.
It was bad. I mean, yes, they turned J.P. Crawford into Gene Segura functionally, which is, I would say, is an upgrade. But yeah, you get Scott Kingery out of 2015. I don't know if the rest of that draft has been particularly great. The Moniak draft, Cole Irvin was their fifth round pick that year. He's already come up to the majors. It was actually kind of funny thinking the other day, because Haseley came up. He was the first round pick in 2017, and they shipped out the fourth round pick for that from that draft to get Jay Bruce. So yeah. I don't know if they're. I would say it's definitely fair to say they're not good or leading the league in being good at drafting.
Yeah,
but I also don't think they've been absolutely terrible, and they've gotten better at getting some of those late round picks, especially under Johnny Amraz.
Last thing for you here, Adam Haseley obviously got the call up this weekend, and had the big hit obviously in the game on Wednesday afternoon. You obviously had been following him closely, covering the Phillies minor league system. Tell us what you know about Adam Haseley. What kind of major leaguer can he be?
So the knock on him a lot since the draft is he's kind of got a little bit of a tweener thing going on, where he's not enough bat for a corner position and he might not have enough glove for center field. And a lot of that had to do with his power production. He was a guy who mostly feel for contact, line stuff into the gaps for doubles. This year, the Phillies have really worked with him on trying to elevate and pull the ball more, and it led to a slow start, and then he just really took off in double A. And I mean, six games of triple A is not a large sample size, so
right. We'll
just kind of gloss over that. But he's a guy who's gonna make a good amount of contact, draw walks, work counts. In the field, he's probably got average, maybe above average speed. He's got an average arm. He's got good instincts, which is why he can handle center field for right now. But he's a guy who's going to do a lot of little things across the board, and you add them all up at the end of the day. He should be a pretty good player. But I think the lack of power or defense or just general impactful tools is going to keep him from being anything more than just a solid bat. However, he's one of these guys who just seems to keep making adjustments. From the minute he showed up in pro ball, the beat writers and other people out in like Williamsport and just around the team have just raved about his work ethic. So maybe he's one of those guys that can beat that just by constantly making adjustments and being better. But I think there's some worry just about the physicality. Mm-hmm. As to whether he can be kind of that all-star impact type player, or he's just kind of an average, solid guy.
Well, he's sounds like he's going to get a lot of opportunity to prove himself here to start off his career at the big league level. Going to get a lot of starts in center field with the Phillies obviously trying to fill the void left behind by Andrew McCutchen. Hey, folks, make sure to follow Matt Winkelman on Twitter. It's at @Matt_Winkelman. Read all of his stuff at PhilliesMinorThoughts.com and also Baseball Prospectus. Matt, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And now it's time for our stat of the week. This, of course, has to do with the fantastic start that Jay Bruce has gotten off to. And this is from Paul Casella, who works for MLB.com. You can follow Paul on Twitter at @Paul_Casella. Jay Bruce is the first Phillies player with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs in a game since Ryan Howard on April 29th, 2011. He's the first to do it on the road since Jim Thome on June 8th, 2004. And again, Jay Bruce did this in his first ever Philly start. Folks, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Matt Winkelman for coming on the podcast. Once again, please leave a rating and a review for the Good Fight podcast feed at Apple Podcasts. And also tell your friends to subscribe, whether they're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other place that you get your podcasts. And if you like bonus content, once again, make sure to hit up the Hittin' Season Patreon by going to patreon.com/Hittin' Season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.